let's have a think about this question. Doesn't the existence of so many religions show that none of them are right? Oh, should also have said, if you're a Pathfinder, 11 to 14-year-old, I have done you a sheet that you can fill in the gaps for. I've handed out one or two, but Ken's got more. I mean, you don't have to be a Pathfinder. You can be any age to fill out out the sheet if you think it'll help you to concentrate or you want to make notes. So Ken's over there. So wave a hand if you want a sheet to fill out, but don't worry if you don't want to. Okay, that's fine. That's all right. Oh, yeah, down at the front for Hessie. That's right, it's coming. Great. Okay, so let's have a think about this question. Now, in putting this question like this, doesn't the existence of so many religions show that none of them are right? I'm trying to sum up what I think is a view that is out there, that lots of people have, and I think lots of people think is just self-evident. This idea that there are just lots of religions out there. Yeah, we know about the main ones. There's Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, and so on. And you learn about them at school, and you know that they're around. You know that there are people around who are following these different religions. But there are also thousands of others. I mean, it's thought that there are over 4,000 different religions in the world, and there's probably a whole load more than that. And some of them can be fairly, well, can feel like they're fairly obscure. I mean, even a religion in Vanuatu that considers the following person to be divine. I wonder who you'd think of, who they might think would be divine. Maybe you've heard about this religion. Yeah, you have one or two nods. Okay, yeah, I wasn't going to do this as a response one, but yeah, go on then, David. Who is it? It is the Duke of Edinburgh. I was stunned when I heard this. They think that that Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, is divine. Which you might think, well, that's ridiculous. But now just put yourself in the Duke of Edinburgh's shoes there for a moment. The pressure that's on him if he visits Vanuatu. I mean, they're not expecting more than just a wave, aren't they? That's quite a lot of pressure. There's a whole load of religions, and you go, well, okay, that one, you go, well, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to go for that one. But there's a whole load where you go, there are thousands of them. And furthermore, there are intelligent people in loads of them. You go, well, there are lots of very clever people who are Muslims, lots of clever people who are Hindus, and so many of them, and so many clever people who are part of a whole load of them, that it might just make you think, well, maybe none of them are really right. And furthermore, we are encouraged to be tolerant. We're told it's one of Britain's values, one of our values, is to be tolerant. And therefore, in the name of tolerance, isn't it good to say you've got all those religions and, well, let's conclude that none of them are right. Now, in saying none of them are right, I'm not saying we conclude that they're all wrong, just that none are right, none are wrong, they're all equally valid, just pick whichever one you want and it doesn't really matter. But don't go around insisting that you're right. And that other people are wrong. Maybe that's your view. I think it's quite a common view, and I think it's one that people just take on board because it's just out there that that's what people think. Well, I'm going to tell you what I think are a couple of problems with that way of thinking. A couple of problems with that way of thinking, and then I'll go on to a couple of reasons why I think you should consider Christianity, if you haven't yet. So a couple of problems with it. First, look at what the religions actually claim. You see, what we're doing when we're saying none are right, none are wrong, is that it's almost like you say, well, imagine all the religions of the world on a bookcase. And on that bookcase, they're all lined up there. They're all like books on that bookcase. And there are thousands of them. And you look at them all and you go, well, maybe none of them are right. None of them are wrong, just because of how big the bookcase is. But that actually is not to think about what the actual religions claim. Tim Keller, who I will quote a bit because he's written a great book called The Reason for God, which deals with this subject and a whole load of others. He's a pastor in America. He says in one of his talks, he sort of cheekily says it to the group he's talking to. He's kind of saying, look, if you come to the conclusion that all religions are kind of equally valid, none are particularly right, none are particularly wrong, they're all just equally valid, it shows you're not listening. to the religions. You're not actually paying attention to what they actually believe. The only way you can say that about religions is if you are kind of looking at the bookcase of religions. As soon as you take the books off the shelf and start to examine what they're really saying, you realize you can't sort of make that claim that none are right, none are wrong, they're all just equally valid. Because the claims that they're making are mutually exclusive. They disagree with one another. They can't all be equally valid. They just can't because of the claims they make. So, for instance, one of the claims of Christianity, the central claim, is that Jesus, a man who lived 2,000 years ago, is God. Well, now, Islam and Judaism and a whole load of other religions, most other religions, will say that's not true, that he isn't God. Well, that is a claim which you go, well, it's either right or it's wrong. Either Christianity is right that Jesus is God, or Christianity is wrong. And you can't say, well, of those religions, well, none are right, none are wrong, they're all just equally valid, because the claims they're making clash with one another. And therefore, as Tim Keller says, we can't all be right about the nature of God. It's just not the nature of the claims that are being made. So that's the first but. But look at what the religions claim. They can't just sit alongside one another on the bookcase of all the religions because they clash. Their claims clash with one another. So they can't all be right. And they can't all be wrong. Second problem with that way of thinking, well, maybe none of them are right, none of them are particularly wrong, they're all just sort of equally valid. Here's the second problem with that. This view itself claims to be right. Do you see that? You see, Tim Keller again says, that claim, that idea of looking at all religions and saying, well, let's just be tolerant. Let's say none are right, none are particularly wrong, they're all just equally valid. That itself is a claim to be right. Do you see that? To try to put it in a really blunt, clear kind of way, this view is sort of saying, I am right that no religion is right. Or, everyone should agree with me that no religion should seek to convince others that it is right. Do you see, the very thing that that kind of standpoint is trying to do, it undoes. It does itself. It's sort of saying, no one should claim to be right. No one should claim that their view is absolutely the right way to think. And I'm right on that. Tim Keller, again, says, it is no more narrow to claim that one religion is right than to claim that one way to think about religions, namely that all are equal, is right. We are all exclusive in our beliefs about religion, but in different ways. Now, that's a fascinating conclusion he comes to. He is saying, everyone, no matter what your view on religion, it is a claim that you are right, and it is an exclusive claim. Even if your claim is no religion is right. That is an exclusive claim. So there are problems with thinking that just that assumption that there is out there, that there are just so many religions, none are right, none are wrong, all are equally valid. There are problems with that way of thinking. Now, you might want to come back with questions on that in due course. I think there are other problems, but I just wanted to give you those two big ones just to think about. Now, the next thing that I'm going to do is then to say, well, okay, if it is the case that everyone's view actually in some ways is exclusive, they're making claims that are exclusive, even those who claim no religion is right, what you then need to do is to look at the claims of the religions and say, well, do they stack up? Do they look like they're right? And I want to give you a couple of reasons why I think you should look into Christianity. So why Christianity? First, the claims of Christianity are based on historical events. The claims of Christianity are based on historical events. Generally, the other religions in the world have a founder who claims to be some kind of prophet or some kind of enlightened person who can tell you how to get to God or how to get to enlightenment. Christianity is unique in saying God himself came, lived among us to get you to God. Now I'm going to unpack that a little bit. And that does make Christianity stand out. It's saying God himself, Jesus claims to be God. He walked among us. He lived on earth. And those were historical events. The Bible is claiming God himself walked among us. Now, we're going to have our reading now. So Joan Mayhew is going to come and read for us. And so if you turn in your Bible to 1 John chapter 1, verses 1 to 4, which is page 1225, and Joan will come and read that for us.
Okay, page 1225, 1 John, chapter 1. The Word of Life. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the Word of Life. The life appeared. We have seen it and testify to it, and we proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and has appeared to us. We proclaim to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. We write this to make our joy complete. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Joan. Now, I just want you to see from that passage what John is saying about, well, he's writing a letter. John is writing a letter, and this is how he's beginning. Now, just notice, will you, how he begins. He says, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. He's talking about Jesus. When he's talking about the word of life, he's talking about Jesus. And he's saying, look, what we taught you, what we proclaimed to you was what we saw. It's what we heard. It's what we touched. It's things that happened. And it's all about Jesus. So John is saying, look, the very basis of our faith is this. Historical events happened. Jesus, God, came and lived among us. In other words, as you look in the Bible, you go, that's saying Jesus really was born on earth. God, born on earth, lived among us, moved amongst people, and died and rose to life again. And John is saying, those are the things that we proclaim to you. Christianity, you see, is based on historical events. It's not just someone's nice idea, or some philosophy, or some enlightened person saying, let me tell you something. It's saying, actually, no, God lived among us. Historical events. And the central event, the key event, is the resurrection of Jesus. Jesus rising to life again, after he'd been dead for 3 days, never to die again. Paul makes it very clear, the Apostle Paul in the Bible makes it very clear, that that is the key event. If Jesus died and rose to life again, then Christianity is true. And a whole load of things follow on from that. Jesus really is who he claims to be. And so on and so on and so on. The central event is Jesus rising to life again. And Paul says, if you can disprove that, if you can show that that didn't happen, then what we're doing is a lie. And forget all about it. So here's the key. It is to investigate Jesus. Was he really the guy that God on earth, was he born? Did he live? Did he die? Did he rise to life again? Investigate those things. And you can investigate them. You can investigate the evidence for Christianity. And that's one of the reasons why I think you should investigate it. A few weeks back, we did our usual monthly youth night. And one of the things that we got them thinking about was what objections do they have to the resurrection? And they got them to write them down. And one wrote down, Christianity just says believe with no evidence. Or it was something like that. Christianity just says have faith, just believe with no evidence whatsoever. And I want to say that is not Christianity. Christianity doesn't say that. If that were the case, I wouldn't be a Christian. And a whole load wouldn't be. Christianity actually says, look at the evidence. Look at who Jesus is. And the evidence is overwhelmingly good for Jesus living, dying, rising to life again. And over 2 billion people around the world have come to the conclusion of saying, yes, actually, I think that really, really did happen. But you can investigate it yourself. Will you investigate it? Now, the second reason why I think it would be great for you to look into Christianity actually is more about the beauty of the claims of Christianity. The first one's kind of the truthfulness of it, that it's about historical events that you can really look into. And if they're true, then it's mind-blowingly wonderful. So you can investigate that. The second one is really to do with the beauty of the claims that Christianity makes. And I've sort of summarized it as do versus done. See, I said a little while back, most other religions, well, their founder is a prophet or an enlightened person who claims that they can tell you the way to God, what you've got to do, how you can get to God. Christianity is unique in saying, actually, no, God came to us, lived on earth to bring us to God, to get us to God, to take us to God. So, all other religions, or most other religions, will say, this is what you've got to do. So, for instance, maybe you've got to do the five pillars of Islam, or you've got to meditate, or you've got to be good, or there's a whole load of things where it will say, do this, do this, do this, do this, and if you do those things, if you fulfill all those criteria, then you get to God, or you get to be enlightened, or you know, there's something you've got to do. But Jesus says, I am God, come to get you to God. Let me show you that in one verse. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18, it says this, for Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God. Now, do you see what that verse is saying? Right at the end there, it's saying Jesus came to do those things to bring you to God. In other words, Christianity is saying, Jesus is saying, you'll never get there by yourself. We will never get there by ourselves. However much you try to do, you will never get there by yourself. I was once invited by a friend to go to a London club. It's sort of club, snooty kind of club. I say that because I'm not a member. But he invited me to come along so that we could go there for lunch together. And it was a lovely lunch. But before we went in, I arrived a bit before him. He told me, you've got to wear a tie to get in. So I was wearing my tie and I was looking quite smart. But I knew I wasn't going to get in through the doors. I arrived, got there, and I knew I wasn't going to get in. And I knew I wasn't going to get in because my friend wasn't with me. And it's that kind of club. You've got to know a member. You've got to have someone there who's going to bring you in. It didn't matter that I was wearing my tie. I couldn't just go up to the door and say, let me in, because the guy there would say, well, are you with a member? I'd say, no, but I'm wearing my tie. Come on, wearing the tie. He'd say, no, you've still got to be with a member. Someone's got to bring you in. Well, the parallel isn't exact with Christianity, but it's an interesting one, isn't it? That lots of religions will say you've got to do, you've got to wear the tie, you've got to look right, you've got to behave in the right way, you've got to do the right things, be good, and then you'll be all right. Christianity says, no, 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 that's not going to work. Why not? Because we're all bad, the Christianity says. We all do wrong things, and nothing, no tie is going to make up for the fact that we do wrong things. We do bad things. And God says, you're never going to get yourself in, but I love you so much, I'm going to send my son so that he can bring you in. That's what that verse is saying. And how does Jesus do it? By dying, that verse says, doesn't it? It says, for Christ died for sins, once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous. In other words, the good for the bad. He dies in our place to bring you to God. He's saying, you'll never do it yourself. I need to do it for you. That's what Jesus says. So it's been said, other religions are about advice, telling you what to do. Christianity is good news, telling you what's been done. Other religions say you need to be your own savior, do the right things. Jesus says, only I can be your savior. And that is utterly wonderful. Jesus does not give us a list of things to say, right, do these things and you'll be all right. He doesn't give us a quest to go on. He doesn't give us a moral level. He says, you've got to be above to get to heaven. He says, I've done it for you. Through my life, death, resurrection, I can bring you to God. So come to me. Well, I'm going to leave it there. And I'm going to suggest now, maybe you have a little think and write down any questions that you've got. So just, if you're happy to, just grab the pen and post-it note that was under your chair and have a little think. If there's a question that you've got, then fill that out and hand them in. So just have a think what question you might have. Don't worry if you don't have a question, that's all right. But Ken will come round with a basket at some point and you can put your post-it note in there. So I'll just give you a moment to have a think. Great, well, thank you very much, and thank you for all the questions. I'm afraid we're not going to be able to get through them all, but they're great questions. And if after this you feel unsatisfied with an answer or you think, actually, you didn't answer my question, I want you to answer my question, what I'm going to do after the service, I'll stick around in here. I might sort of stick around down here. Come to me and ask me your question. Or if you say, actually, you didn't really get what I was asking there, then come and ask me afterwards. Okay, so let's get going. What is the evidence for Jesus being God? Great question. Okay, we're saying there's the evidence out there. Look at the evidence. What does it say? And then make a conclusion on that. Well, it's a good question to ask to say, well, what is that evidence? Well, the Bible contains a lot of this evidence. It's interesting. At the end of John's Gospel, John says this. At the end of John's Gospel, he says this. Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. In other words, John is saying, look, I've pulled together loads of evidence. I've pulled together lots of stories about Jesus, a lot of the things that he did. Luke, in his gospel in the Bible, which is telling again of Jesus' life, Luke says, I've investigated it all. I've looked at the eyewitness evidence. I've pieced it all together for you so that you can look through, see the evidence. So a lot of the evidence is here. It's in the Bible to read it and say, look, does it actually stack up? Does it make sense? Does it look like Jesus is who he claims to be? So that's part of it. More of the evidence is Jesus fulfilling things from the Old Testament. Things that the Old Testament, so before Jesus lived and died and rose to life again, loads of things there that were predicted about Jesus, where Jesus fulfills them. And there are some of those things which Jesus had no control over. It wasn't that he was deliberately, some of them he deliberately went around and said, yeah, I'm deliberately going to do this. Like riding into Jerusalem on a donkey. Yeah, that's an example of Jesus saying, right, I'm deliberately going to fulfill the Old Testament. But other things there that he couldn't possibly have made happen. So when he was crucified, the fact that the soldiers gambled for his clothes, that's predicted in the Old Testament, hundreds of years before Jesus died. So there's a whole load of evidence there where you go, actually, within the Bible, there's predictions, prophecies, where you go, that couldn't have happened just by accident. And Jesus didn't make that happen. He didn't sort of engineer it. It just sort of, it happened. It fulfilled what was predicted in the Old Testament. So you've got things like that. So that's some of the evidence. And I would encourage you, if you're going, okay, show me more of the evidence. The thing to do is to look at these eyewitness accounts, to look at the testimonies about what Jesus did, and to sort of fire your questions at what the Bible says. So I would encourage you, come on something like Christianity Explored. We look at things like the evidence that there is, and you can fire your questions there. So that's one. Next question. You said it's not by us doing good things that we can get to heaven, yet the message of the Bible is about doing good. Isn't that contradictory? Well, I don't think it is contradictory. I mean, you're right to say in the Bible there are plenty of instructions. You've got the Ten Commandments there. You've got plenty of things, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, places where there are instructions for things that we are to do. But we've got to be very clear, actually, between the difference between God saying, do this to get to heaven, and God saying, do this because you're already going to heaven or because you're my people. And that's a really important distinction. So, for instance, in the Old Testament, before the Ten Commandments, what does God do? God rescues a people out of Egypt, out of slavery, brings them to himself and says, right, now, as my rescued people, live like this. He doesn't say to them beforehand, while they're in slavery, right, now, do good, obey these commandments, then I'll rescue you and you can be my people. It's the other way around. Now, that is really, really, really significant. So the Bible nowhere says, be good, you be good, and you'll get to heaven. No, it says, come to Jesus, trust in him, become one of God's people, and then out of joy, out of thankfulness, out of love for God, for his rescue, now live that out. Okay, so that is an important distinction to make between saying, actually, you do these things to get to heaven, and saying, actually, no, as God's chosen people, as God's rescued people, now live out these things that God instructs us to do. So no, I don't think it is a contradiction there, but it is very important to make that distinction. Really important to make that distinction. Thank you. Great question. Okay, next one. I've heard many people tell me, I believe in a God. I also live a good life. I think, isn't that good enough to go to heaven? I mean, I don't think I deserve hell. How would you respond to this? Again, another great question. I think lots of people will be thinking that kind of thing. You know, I know people who say, well, I believe in a God, and I'm pretty good. I'm an okay kind of person. Isn't that good enough? I don't deserve hell, do I? I mean, I should be all right with that, shouldn't I? The difficulty on that sort of line of thinking is to say, well, therefore we are deciding who should get in and who shouldn't. And you and I, and all of us between us, we might sort of think, well, let's get the world together. And we would sort of say, well, okay, there's this level of goodness, and we think that would be all right. And I'm pretty sure I'm probably above that line, so I'll be all right. Well, that would be all very well. But actually what we need is God to say what is right and what is wrong. What is a level where you go, actually, that's all right. We need God to tell us. So it doesn't really matter what I think about that, how good I think you are or how good you think I am. Because ultimately, our views are all skewed, aren't they? Yeah, I mean, I think I'm doing pretty well, but you might look at my life and you might go, well, you're not doing so well. Well, who's to say you're right? Who's to say I'm right? What we need is someone who is perfectly good to say, look, this is the level. This is good. This is what's right. And God says, well, this is the level, and it's way above anything that we could do. But this is the love of God, isn't it? To say, yeah, the level is so high, but I love you so much, I will send my son to get you to me. And this is wonderful news, because then it's not about how good you are. You can be really bad. And actually, on the cross next to Jesus, there was a guy on the cross next to Jesus, wasn't there? A thief who knew he'd been bad, who said, actually, I deserve this. I mean, he said he deserved crucifixion. That's pretty extreme, isn't it? Grim way to die. And he says, we deserve this, but Jesus doesn't. And he actually turned to Jesus, put his faith in Jesus, and Jesus said, today you will be with me in paradise. Now, if a thief, if that criminal could get in, Jesus is saying, look, it's not about being good or bad. It's about, will you trust me? Will you let me take you to God? And if that thief can get in, that's wonderful news, because that means you and I can as well. Okay. Next one. So, are the Jews wasting their time waiting for a Messiah? It's a great question. Are they wasting their time? Because they're still waiting for the Messiah to come along. Well, I think there's a short answer to that, but there's probably a longer answer, which would be easier to get across, which is, I think they should investigate Jesus to say, does he fulfill what the Old Testament was looking for in the Messiah? Does Jesus actually fulfill what they were looking for? You go to Isaiah 53. It's looking for someone in the Old Testament. It's saying it's looking for someone who is going to come, who is going to bear the sins, the wrongdoing of his people. Someone who's going to draw people from around the world to God. Does Jesus fulfill that? And I would say the answer is yes. So are they wasting their time looking for the Messiah? Well, I would say the Messiah has come. So they should keep looking. But look at Jesus first. Because he's the one who actually does fulfill all those criteria. Okay. Let's go one more. Okay, tricky one. Can other religions be half right, or are they completely mutually exclusive? Could parts of Islam be right and parts wrong? Okay, as you look at the different religions, there are clearly things that they would say which are in common. You know, being loving, being kind. You know, various religions will say, you know, be nice. You go, well, okay, in that sense, we've got something we agree on. But actually, at the very root, the very heart of what religions are about is who is God, if there is a God. And Christianity does say first of the Ten Commandments is all about worshipping God and Him alone. And the God, not just a God, the God, the real God who has revealed Himself to us. So actually, I would say they are mutually exclusive, completely mutually exclusive, really. Not only, centrally because of who God is, who the God is that they claim, but also then why you're to do the good things that you're to do. That, again, is mutually exclusive. That thing that I was saying at the end about do versus done. You see, because even where religions say be loving, be kind towards one another, they're not saying it for the same reasons. Okay, Christianity is saying be loving and kind towards one another because of, well, several reasons. But the key one is because of what Jesus has done for you. Not to earn your way to heaven, but because of what Jesus has done for you. And therefore, the motivation behind saying, well, I'm going to be loving towards other people is very different from what other religions would say. So even on the things where you say, well, yeah, we kind of agree that there's an instruction there to be nice to one another. But even there's a contradiction with one another as to why you should be kind to one another. We say, well, we follow a crucified Messiah and we want to imitate him out of love for him for the rescue that he's achieved for us. That's our motivation for going out and being loving towards other people. Well, that's different from other religions. So even on the things that we would agree on, I think there is a contradiction there. There are some things where you go, okay, yeah, we do kind of agree on some of those things. But at root, at heart, it is still mutually exclusive. Okay, like I say, afterwards, do come and find me if you think, that was a rubbish answer. Come and grab me, inquire, ask more, express your doubts, your concerns, your questions. I'll stick around down here and you can come and ask me more. I'm going to hand over to Mark.